Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
All right, well, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Happy Thursday, everybody. Hopefully you're having a great week. We are in for a real treat today. You know, we've got Krista Hesselink, the Compassion Pastor from the Meeting House. Now, the Meeting House, just full disclosure, is a church I used to work at. And Krista's an incredible leader, and I am just so thankful to have her on the phone, on the call today. So, Krista, welcome.
Thank you. Good to see you, Rich. Yes, it's great being here.
It's so nice to have you here. I really really appreciate that. You know, truth be known, I've been trying to get multiple people from the Meeting House to come onto the podcast, and no one has said yes except for you. So
really?
I know. Isn't it crazy? So maybe it's, you know, it's that whole black sheep
crazy
thing.
Crazy. You know? I guess so.
But you're compassionate, so you were like, yes, exactly. I will take compassionate on Rich and join the show.
Exactly.
Just kidding. For people that don't know, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Meeting House? Tell us about, you know, your church, your context.
Yeah.
Give us a sense of it.
Yep. So we're a multi-site church located in Ontario, Canada, and we have 14 locations with a few teaching venues. We've been at it for a while. Our first site launched in 2002, and we have about 6,000 people who would participate on a weekend service. Our heartbeat is our home churches, so we have 185 home churches that meet across all our locations. And that's a little bit about the Meeting House.
Nice.
I don't know what else you want me to say. You know a lot.
No, it's fantastic. You know, the Meeting House is a great church. For people who haven't checked out the Meeting House, you really need to. TheMeetingHouse.com. There's a lot of people who the Meeting House, like from a multi-site point of view, is like within the kind of 1%. They, you know, you guys have campuses over an hour away. You know, you just breezed over the fact that you have mid-teens number of campuses. You know, 85% of multi-site churches don't get beyond 3, and you're like, well, we might launch 3 this year. So, you know, it's a fantastic church for a lot of reasons. And actually, I think what we're talking about today I think is the kind of thing that churches all across the country can learn from. So I'm super excited to have you, you know, on the phone today talking through. Now one of the things, so you've kind of, as a church, you've gone through these multiple waves of kind of, you know, various missions, and there's always kind of a compassion component to that. And one of the things I love about the Meeting House is, why don't you tell us a little bit about that? So what kind of, give us a sense of kind of the compassion work that you've been doing at your church.
Sure. Well, it actually hasn't always been a part of our DNA at all. So in about 2006, we really felt the Lord sort of moving us in a direction of, you know, yes, we want lots of people to hear about Jesus and come to know him. We want lots of our own people to go deeper in their own journey. But, man, we need to really figure this compassion thing out, both locally and globally. So we, in 2006, were a part of a real discernment process in our whole community. Rich, you're part of that. So we, for multiple reasons, really felt that we were being drawn to the work that's being done in Southern Africa, in the countries of Southern Africa, around the HIV and AIDS pandemic. And part of that was just because of our own denomination. We have a lot of Brethren in Christ people in Southern Africa. So that started the journey for us, and it's been, I can't believe it's been like 7-8 years now, where every year we just keep growing deeper in this. And so over the course of our last two missions, like you said, we have really had pretty audacious goals in terms of raising funds, but also to build meaningful relationships with our partners and the people in Southern Africa.
One of the things I appreciate, about you specifically, as a leader, and then also, you know, the church as a whole, is, you really emphasize, you know, that there really isn't an us and them. And actually, you breeze over the word partner, which I think a lot of, like, a lot of guys that work and people that work in churches, they're communicators, and they use a word like partner, because that sounds good. Mm-hmm. But what I think what you're pushing towards is at a much deeper level. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. One of the things that I think has been a driving force for our global compassion engagement, for lack of a better way of saying it, is that we want the relationships that we establish to be mutually transformative. And again, that's sort of like a hot word in the development world. But what we know to be true is that the historical approach of North American mission in the church, you know, we have a pretty bad track record.
Right.
And so there's been this very heavy hand of us versus them, the West, you know, giving to them. They have nothing really to give to us. And that is just not true. And so we've really tried to take the approach of the posture of a learner, the posture that the body of Christ has many gifts to give one another, and those who happen to live in the global South have incredible gifts to give us. And so how do we create a relationship and a way of support that respects that and sort of champions those values? So that is, we've done that in a few different ways, but that is essentially the heartbeat, that we really wanted to help our people grow in maturity in this aspect, but then also that our whole strategic plan holds that value very, very high.
I'd love to hear more about that. So how okay. is it that you're, you know, kind of how, so that's the problem you've defined,
yeah.
okay, this is how we're trying to, mm-hmm. You know, we're trying to do. So what does that actually practically look like? How is it that your church is developing relationships, you know, mm-hmm. with people in the global South?
Yeah. Well, I think there's probably three key ways. I think one of the ways that we just end up having this seep into our DNA is that we always talk about it like this. We always talk about the fact that we have so much to learn from our brothers and sisters, that they have gifts to give us. And so whether we're teaching, whether we're training our leaders, whenever we're in this conversation, this is the sort of language that we use, and we model that and try and help our people understand and grow in that. So that's just sort of the blanket. But
right.
The two, I think, most practical aspects of our work is we don't pretend to know what we're doing on the ground in Southern Africa. We are a church in the Greater Toronto Area, and while we may have people on staff who have development experience, we don't know the context. So we are purposefully partnering with third parties. We're purposely partnering with other partners who have a long history, respected work on the ground in Southern Africa. So the two partners we're working with most significantly is Mennonite Central Committee, MCC, mm-hmm. and World Vision. Mennonite Central Committee since 2007, and then just in the last year and a half, 2 years, we've sort of started to work with World Vision. So those were natural partners for us, but that came out of a very significant discernment process. And so we basically, we don't dictate the work that's happening. You know, we may have millions and millions of dollars to give, but we take a very light-handed approach to say, we want you to do the work. MCC, World Vision, and some churches and some constituents that have actually, that's been a growing process for us, because some people say, no, I want to know that my name is on that well.
Absolutely.
And you know, that sort of approach, and we've said, nope, we're going to raise millions of dollars, and we're going to do the work to trust our partners, and they're going to do the work to report back meaningfully. So that's one very significant way, where we just say, we're not the experts, they are, and we will let the relationships they've cultivated on the ground actually really serve us well as a community.
Why don't we just pause for a minute and talk about how you ended up developing those relationships with those, mm-hmm. you know, third parties. What did that look like? Kind of how did that, you know, discernment process, or how did you end up deciding on MCC and then mm-hmm. World Vision, both great organizations,
yeah.
but how did you end up there?
Yeah, well, like I said, our denomination is the Brethren in Christ, and a large portion, in fact, far greater than North America, there's Brethren in Christ folk in the countries of Southern Africa. MCC, Mennonite Central Committee, is the Relief and Development Organization of Anabaptist Churches, which the Meeting House is an Anabaptist church. Well, Peace Church, however you want to say that. And so when we were on the ground, we sent a couple, Joel and Julianne, good friends of ours, to live in Zimbabwe and to do that research real time on the ground. And so that was an investment of time and resources in order to do that investigative work. And they basically, after 9 months, came back with some recommendations of what organizations at this point in our church family and the situation on the ground would be the best partners. And that, you know, that was just a discernment process that we went through. So we knew we needed to find a partner, and that came back. Now, Joel and Julian also said, you know what, we can see there being some great possibilities with World Vision on the ground in the future as well as a good fit. But we knew that for us taking that first step out of the gate in 07, that we needed to take one partnership. So we did that with Mennonite Central Committee, and we've been continuing to grow that, but then in the last couple of years, we've realized, you know, we have opportunities to grow. Our community has grown in sort of becoming more generous as a result of us focusing ourselves, which has been wonderful. And so we knew that we had the opportunity to go even beyond what MCC was able to do with us.
Right.
One of the reasons why we chose MCC, or sorry, World Vision, was MCC at the time was not working in the country of Malawi. And there is a very significant Brethren in Christ Church contingency in Malawi.
Right.
And so we were looking for a partner that was a good fit for us in Malawi. And so World Vision happens to be the partner that we work with. Mm-hmm. And as a result, we've had some really neat things happen. You know, over 1,800 children have been sponsored.
Wow. That's amazing.
A year and a half. And so it's just really, really amazing to see. And I think that just has come out of our focus over the years, so that, you know, when we say here's a need and here's a way we want to build a relationship, our people just are responding, and it's a really amazing thing. So,
well, you know, I don't want people to miss an early stage, and it could be because that was a part of the story that I was involved in. But when you know, Joel and Julianne left for, you know, those 9 months, that may sound like, if you're listening on the outside, like, oh, so they took some people who were kind of, you know, they weren't really that involved and sent them out.
Mm.
No, Joel and Julianne were, and at that point, and they're still, you know, they're not on staff anymore, but were significant leaders in the life of the church.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little bit like, you know, lopping off your left arm and saying, okay, you go to Africa for a year and help us figure that stuff out. It was a significant sacrifice organizationally, which you know, when I look back over the, you know, the arc of my ministry life, that's one of those. And I obviously wasn't like, I was one person in that conversation.
Sure.
But it was one of those things that I was like super proud that our church did that. That it was like, man, that was the right thing to do. We're going to take time to just listen, and we're going to send a significant leader to just listen and to learn. It was amazing.
Well, and you know what I think too, back to that time, which reminds me now just how much God has taken our community from sort of A to B, is people, I don't even think, really knew what we were doing. I mean, they sort of were like, oh, okay, someone's going to Africa. It's Joel. Right. We know Joel and Julianne. Okay, great. Like, that was just this whole connection with Southern Africa and sort of our global engagement on a compassion front, completely non-existent. Quite honestly. So it was like the non-conversation. We often remind people, it's like, when we started this, no one had a clue who MCC was. In fact, we would never even say MCC.
Right.
And now people are like, it's common language for us.
Part of who you are.
Absolutely.
And, you know, one of the things that was interesting, which I think you're just, because you're a good Canadian like myself, you're being, you know, we sent Joel and Julianne, Joel and Julianne went with a certain kind of, there were some assumptions that we made about organizations we may end up partnering with.
Mm.
And actually, from learning on the ground, we ended up with MCC, not the organization that we thought we'd end up with, which was an interesting, you know, that was interesting to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And it reinforced to me the value of on the ground, a long-term on-the-ground evaluation,
mm-hmm.
which was really seeking to listen and to learn and to, like you're saying, posturing yourself, hey, how can we learn from folks?
Mm-hmm.
When we realized, you know what, actually, MCC would be the better organization for, you know, for the meeting house to partner with. That was great. So that's an interesting takeaway for churches that might be listening in.
Yeah, I think if we are really serious about repositioning the church and mission, we need to understand that we're not experts, generally. I mean, we can grow into becoming experts, but we're certainly not out of the gate. And there are organizations who have consistent long-term history and relationship on the ground. And I think that's the only way that we should be engaging ourselves in another place around the world. So yeah, that's a significant one. And then, of course, our learning teams, I think, are probably another significant part of sort of framing the conversation. So
yeah, tell us about the learning teams. What is that?
Yeah, I would say we have two different types of learning teams. One is us creating a learning team in Canada and sending a team to Southern Africa, and then the other one is the sort of the reverse experience, which we call exchange, and I'll talk about that in more detail in a second. But learning teams, I mean, let's say we're a church of 6,000 people. We send about 12 individuals over from our community in a year.
to
learn. So we are not we do not send teams en masse. We don't do any mission work in terms of going and building things or we don't just do that. We would say, no, our partners are actually doing the work on the ground. We're not going over to build anything or, you know, proselytize. We're literally going to learn. Because the partners on the ground are doing all of those things. And so, yeah, we have we kind of treat it like it's a class. Like people are signing up and paying tuition in a way to go. That's the way we frame it. We would say, you know, it's about a $3,500 experience and you're going to be going for 2 weeks and we train and we study together and we learn. And so that the sole purpose of these trips is that people go and then they return to be advocates in our community. So the recruitment process and the entire training experience is really about when they return. They commit to being advocates for a year in our community. And admittedly, like this is probably some of the areas where we've learned a lot and we need to continue to learn a lot. I mean, I would say we haven't quite hit our stride in terms of the good advocacy work that's coming out of these guys, but but really, to be quite honest, that is the whole purpose. We choose people knowing that they have networks in our community. Of course, we're multi-site, so we try to get people from different sites. And so when we have sort of like a campaign like we're in right now called AIDS Care, you know, these advocates are so helpful because they're the people from our community who've lived and learned and have stories and experience and relationship. The other reason why we do learning teams is because we have this value of building relationships. So when we go, even though it might not be the same people, we will have two learning teams a year go to these same partners, to these connection with MCC staff, and and so the Meeting House as a name is actually somewhat familiar to many people. I met your friend last year, and so it's neat for us to continue to use these learning teams to build relationships. But that's one. And then exchange. You want me to talk about exchange?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, sure. So I'm like literally in the middle of a very exciting season at a church. Exchange is a reverse learning team. It's where our partners in Southern Africa have hand-picked leaders in their context to come to Canada for 2 weeks to learn, to share, and to build relationships. So we have a gentleman from World Vision Community. We have two who represent programs and partners with MCC, and then one pastor from the Brethren in Christ Church in Malawi. And so these four guys landed a week ago. We have so much snow right now here, and they've never seen it, that it's the perfect time for them to arrive.
Wow, landed right in the middle of the polar vortex.
Yes, and this is the word that they use. That they're like, it's so unique. That would be one word. Anyway, so we did this for the first time in 2010, and I would say, as I reflect back, that was having a team from Southern Africa come to the Meeting House, spend 2 weeks with us. We do events where people can learn and ask questions, and was probably the most significant event to sort of turn the lights on for our community. So we had been talking for about 3 years. You know, we'd been raising money. We'd been highlighting the HIV and AIDS pandemic. We'd been trying to introduce our community to certain partners. And it was like this event in sort of mid-mission turned the lights on for everybody. It was like, okay. And so for us, it was just an invaluable thing. We really wanted to do it again last year. And we had to cancel this whole experience. You can imagine if anybody's listening and you're working on something like this, a whole 2 weeks of having a team come. And we had to cancel it 4 days before because visas, they had major visa problems. And we were just really hoping and praying that it would come through, and it didn't. So,
oh, my goodness.
So we were supposed to do it last year. Didn't happen, and so we planned it for this year. So these guys have been on the ground. They went skating for the first time yesterday. They're at Niagara Falls today. They were up to CN Tower. So it's been really great. And so we've had a few events this week, and our community, again, is just, you know, really impacted. So.
Now, what would you this was the thing that caught my attention that I'm like, okay, I've got to get Krista on the podcast. Because I don't think I've ever heard I don't know any church that's done that. Like I don't, and there's a lot of things that the Meeting House done that I've always been like, I don't know anybody that does that. And this is one of those things. What would you say are the kind of two or three things that have kind of, you know, that you learned from 2010 that you're applying to this year, you know, that are kind of having an impact in, you know, with your community as as these guys are visiting with, you know, various kind of people?
It's a great question. I think we're yeah, where I'm still right in the middle of seeing if what we thought we needed to change is actually working.
Right.
But one thing that happened in 2010 that we didn't plan for and it was unexpected was that the leaders who came had a, what's the best way to say it? They really came with, I would say, prophetic words for our church. And we didn't, and I don't think they expected it, and we certainly didn't expect it either. But in the course of those 2 weeks that we spent together and the conversations we were having and the ways in which we were, just talking with one another and praying with one another, you know, that last day, but just before they caught their plane, I think we were all as senior leaders quite like, well, this is like a holy moment here, because really? What they're sharing with us is actually significant for us in terms of affirmation of what we're doing, encouragement on the message that we're speaking, and just continuing to challenge us, essentially, as North American Christians.
Right.
So that was really significant. So I think what we're doing this time is we're actually inviting them, giving them more space and right. freedom and permission to share that. You know, if anyone has interacted with brothers and sisters in Southern Africa, you know, there's a little bit of a reservation to want to share. We want to really try and even out any power differential between us and them. And so we have to try and create better space for them to share that sort of work with us. So what we're doing at all of our events and then with our senior leadership team is just actually giving them ample opportunities to share and to create a space where that sort of conversation happens.
Right.
So far, so good, you know.
That's amazing.
We jam-packed the schedule way too much last time. I mean, just way too much. So this time, it still feels jam-packed, but it's much more appropriate for their
right.
schedule.
Well, and there's like anyone who, you know, if you've had an opportunity to go on a learning trip, you know, a lot of times that is like a once-in-a-lifetime experience for folks.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know, and I've been on a few experiences like that, there's always the, like, scheduled stuff that's interesting. But to mm-hmm. be honest, most of my takeaways have been in the cracks, right? It's
yeah.
been talking with someone. It's been, you know, I remember back when I was on a learning trip with the Meeting House back in, I guess that would have been 2007.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the things I remember, there was interesting, all the stuff we had planned was interesting.
Right.
But there were interactions with individuals that weren't really planned that made such a huge difference. And obviously, to be honest, those are the things I remember most, you know, these yes. years later, more so than the, like, you know, we went to this place and visited yeah. and someone gave a speech and, you know, then we said a few things or whatever.
Yeah, and we're that's exactly right. And we're applying that so that there is more breathing space, but that more of our community mm-hmm. is a part of that breathing space with them. So, for example, right. we've done a better job this time around of creating ways in which you can just have a meal or have a cup of tea with this team.
Right.
And so it's casual, but we're inviting more of our leaders and volunteers into that experience. So that was another learning that we had from the last
cool.
time. Yeah.
Well, anything else you'd love to share with people about this, you know, just this whole area? I think you're obviously an incredibly sharp leader, and I think you're thinking and pushing a lot of people who are listening in today who have thought about it, just to be honest, in a really traditional, you know, way. I think there's a lot of church leaders who think, you know, we're going to go and do a missions trip in this country. We're going to solve this problem. And I really appreciate you pushing us on that today in a very gracious way. But is there anything else you'd love to kind of share with us as we kind of wrap up this interview?
Well, just to say that we're still learning. I mean, we have lots to learn. And I think the one thing I've enjoyed seeing the most is that our community, I would say, has deepened and grown in maturity as it relates to giving and understanding that in order to give generously, that something must change and that their life must simplify in some ways, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Live simply, give generously. That's sort of adage. And I think that's the one thing that we've learned is if you can help people in their own personal journey mm-hmm. with Jesus sort of do that simplification work, that heart work, that the generosity will flow, and that this approach of a posture of a learner, working with third parties, you end up really discipling very mature donors in a way.
Interesting.
And I think that is such a beautiful thing that, you know, our community can literally just has been groomed to trust the work that partners are doing because we do a good job of connecting with our partners.
Right.
And we just say, let's give. Let's raise $1 million. It's like, okay, let's do that. Right. And they're not really asking for, you know, play-by-play reports, and we don't need to give that to them in the same way that I think we would have if we'd taken a little bit of a different approach. So,
Very cool.
We're learning lots.
Thanks so much.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
All right, well, welcome to the lightning round. We're here today with Krista Hesselink from the Meeting House. And so, Krista, is there an online resource that you're using these days that's particularly helpful for you?
Yes. I made the decision that I would go paperless a year ago.
Wow.
Like, completely paperless.
Oh, my goodness.
It's been crazy. It was a journey, but I needed to figure out what to use. So Evernote and Productive are the two apps that have saved my life.
Nice. Now, Productive, I don't know that one.
It's like a little to-do list thing.
Okay.
It's basically an easy way to connect your to-do list. I know Evernote does something like that, and I just ended up using both of them, and now I sort of...
Yeah, you have a system.
It works well. Yeah, I love the fact that it's web-based and I can do it from my phone and my computer. So
nice. That's very good.
Yeah.
What's a book that you've been reading, I don't know, maybe in the last 6 months or so, that's having an impact on your thinking or your ministry?
Yep. Icarus Deception by Seth Godin. I read in the summer, I believe. And I just love how he frames that everyone's an artist, that art is about connection, and you need to take risk. And so that's been playing out in my personal life, in my work life. In lots of different ways, but I needed to read it again because it was so good.
very cool. What's another ministry that you're looking at that kind of inspires you? You think, wow, like that, we're learning from these days.
Yep. Ryan and George at Eastlake Community Church up in Seattle. We're just starting to get to know them as a meeting house, and you know they do some crazy stuff. And I just heard that they raised like $800,000 for Charity Water with basically a big keg party.
Right, nice.
Like drinks for drinks. I thought that was brilliant. So I'm inspired by their fresh approach. So
yeah, that's a fantastic church. If you don't know Eastlake, you really should. You know, at Liquid we do a lot of stuff with Charity Water, and it's been fun to hear, you know, the stuff that they've been involved in as well is fantastic. So it's a great church. Yeah. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, just to kind of pick their brain, who would you want to spend that time with and why?
You know, this is, like, the hardest question in the world, by the way. But it's a little cliche, but I would say Donald Miller. And the reason is because I love what he writes. I went to the Storyline Conference in October in Nashville, which is great. And I'm in the process of, I don't even want to say I'm writing a book yet because it's still a little premature, but I am in the process of writing a book. And so I think he's got lots of great things to say. So I'd love to learn from him on that.
Oh, this is the scoop here. Now, what is the book you're writing? I know you're not writing it, but
I'm not really writing it. Oh, gosh, Rich. I'm writing a little about transformation.
Okay.
The concept of transformation, but it's a little bit of a personal story, some of the stuff I've learned. Honestly, I don't even know what's going to happen, so we'll see.
Nice. Well, when that comes out, you'll need to come back on the show so we can get some people. All right, so when you're not learning from people in the Global South and you just need to kind of relax a little bit, a little bit of Sabbath, what do you do for fun? What do you do for fun?
Yes, I'm happiest when I'm on the trail. I love to hike, which is a killer now in the winter because I actually do hate hiking in the winter.
Right.
Because I can never actually find the trail.
Right.
Hiking, cooking, reading, just, hanging out with friends.
Where do you hike? Where are you hiking?
You know what?
The Bruce Trail kind of thing?
Yep. I'm looking at my window right now. I am literally 10 minutes from the trailhead of the Bruce Trail in Ontario here. So.
Oh, nice. Great stuff.
Yeah.
Well, Krista, I really appreciate you being on the show today. If people wanted to get in touch with you, maybe to get on the list for your book release, or just learn more about the Meeting House, how could they do that?
Yep. So you can find me, meetinghouse.com. You can find me at my email, krista.hesselink@themeetinghouse.com. Twitter, CL Hesselink. I'm around. Please connect.
Great. So that's themeetinghouse.com. Really appreciate you being on the show today, Krista. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, thanks, Rich.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com, and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch, or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.